Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Kia ora, haere mai, and welcome to Caucus for 2023. Doesn't 3 years just fly by? Welcome back into your favourites politics podcast. We're here again for another season, polished, ready to go. It's campaign time, although it kind of seems like we're almost running a bit late because so much has been happening in politics recently. On the other hand, it is 71 days still to go until the election. The House doesn't even rise till the end of the month. But here we are. Most of the gang is back. Let me reintroduce the crew.
She's Lisa Owen.
Why, thank you, Guyon Espinner. Nice to see you.
That's the old crew. And here's the new crew.
Not Scott Campbell.
Not Scott.
Hashtag.
So NSC, not Scott Campbell, exactly. Is otherwise known as Julian Wilcox.
Thank you for having me. It's
good to be here. Welcome in. Really nice to have you here.
Yeah, no, great to be here.
Really good to have a new caucus member. Today on the show, our agenda is to set the scene for this election that's coming up in October. Because, as I say, there's a fair bit going on already.
What New Zealanders are going to see from us in the coming election campaign is a very optimistic vision about the future of the country.
I can deliver and I will deliver. And a government I lead will focus on the things that matter and deliver results that will improve New Zealanders' life. Because that is what it's all about, and that's why I'm here.
ACT won't take the positions in government if we're not going to deliver real change.
Māori are not the problem waiting to be punished. We are the solution. We are the opportunity waiting to happen. We are flipping the tax upside down, GST off kai, our capital gains tax.
Obviously, you've heard that Chris Hipkins, as the Labor leader, has ruled out a wealth tax and a capital gains tax.
I do think that the Labor Party have got this wrong. Yes, I do.
Ultimately, this isn't about me or about us. It's about New Zealanders. And they want to see us focused on cost of living, on law and order, on the issues that matter to them, and that's where our focus will be.
National's going to be pro-growth, we're going to be pro-innovation, we're going to be pro-investment.
Our first priority is to get as many votes, as many Green MPs as possible to influence the direction of the next government. That is our priority, that is what we are focused on.
A lot of focus, a lot of things that matter to New Zealanders in there. What does matter to New Zealanders? What are we going to be focused on in the next few months, guys?
Seems like a really back-to-basics election, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Focused around those key issues. I guess that's often the case, but National's certainly running a really back-to-basics campaign focused on roads, cost of living.
Getting New Zealand back on track.
Or back to the future. Because what I thought listening to that montage of voices was, it could almost be any election, but for maybe one voice in the comments of one person in there. And I think it has been the longest winter of discontent. Kiwis are struggling hard out. Mortgage payments, rentals that aren't up to scratch, putting kai on the table, grocery bills going up, and it's kind of bah humbug.
And in the shadow of COVID? I mean, this is actually not just this winter, right?
Yeah, I think part of it is also there's not a lot for people to vote for. There's a lot for people to vote against. And when you have an election like that, people tend to not turn out. So political turnout, voter turnout is going to be interesting later on. But yeah,
if it's going to be a close one, that could spark.
Yeah, they could have real impacts. And I think the other thing, you're right, Lisa, about political humbug. There's a lot of bar humbug going on. You know, people are worried about what they're going to do tomorrow. They're going to be worried about food on the table and all that kind of stuff. And there's not a lot of inspiration and invigoration for people want to go and vote for someone or for something.
Yeah, you've got this situation where people are quite down, aren't they? I mean, just in your personal experience, just in your dealings with people, you know, I can't remember a time where, you know, there's just a real lack of optimism, and there's a lot of broken parts to Aotearoa at the moment. And you're really feeling like that is not a good place for an incumbent government to be.
I was going to say, incumbency is not your friend then, right?
So National, you know, in the normal swing of things, should be a lot further ahead than they are. I mean, I see the poll last night. What is it, 37, 32 sort of thing?
Yeah, let's look at these polls, because there's been a couple, and they seem to be aligning now, the One News and three polls. So, yeah, finish your numbers.
Well, where are we for Nationals at close to 37, Labour close to 32? The interesting thing for me is those flank parties. Obviously, ACT to Nationals' right flank, still just over 12%. It's a pretty remarkable result for them, and the Green vote holding up at 10%. So pretty unusual to be starting a campaign and see the two major parties not far shy of the mid-30s. That's pretty low for our major parties.
And the flanks are growing. So you pointed out the numbers, the solid numbers that ACT and Green and the Greens have. And they're tracking upwards, 1.3%, 1.5% and climbing. And with the exception of Te Pāti Māori, who had a less than 1% dip, I think, in that particular poll, they have been making relatively consistent gains. I mean, David Seymour must be twisting his hands together.
This would be ACT's first time in double figures. They've never got below above 7-something percent, which they did in, 99 and 2002.
Yeah.
So best result ever of 7.14. They are consistently looking at double figures.
12 seems. So why are they so popular, though? That's the question that many people
are they the new National Party?
Well, are they an alternative? Are they a way to not vote for the government if you don't particularly love the National Party?
Yeah. Well, you could if you look at those numbers, 36%. I mean, a popular National Party under a John Key type figure was 47%, right? So that's the difference. It's Christopher Luxon leading a National Party seen as okay but not inspiring. He obviously hasn't really inspired the centre right, has he? So you can carve off that. Under a John Key type national government that was very popular among the centre right, he'd sucked up all of that ground and left almost no space for ACT. So yeah, a bit of kudos to Seymour. He's a good performer. He's interesting. He knows how to work the media. So give him all that. But part of that reason, in my view, is because Christopher Luxon, while he's doing okay, has not inspired the centre right.
We'll get to the leadership in a minute, but yeah, pick up.
Yeah, well, I was going to say at 36.6%, leaders get sacked for a whole lot, higher grades than that.
Well, I think Shearer went at about 35.
Similar number, wasn't it? And look, I was looking at 1996 was the most similar. When you've seen the third parties this strong across the board and the middles, usually you've got a relatively dominant player, an Ardern, a Key, a Clark, somebody who's actually kind of more noticeably stronger, right? That thing. But if you go back to 1996, you've got the Nats ended up on 31 with 33%. Labour was on 28. New Zealand First 13. Alliance 10. So that's a bit similar, right? That's similar kind of numbers where the further
but
right
parties. But you also
had
a very strong Winston Peters.
You had so the election thing. In 1993. So is David Seymour now really taking that?
Yeah, I think he's been Winston to the punch on a whole bunch of things that Winston's trying to talk about
which is,
now.
He's been moving into that space for a couple of elections now. Has it actually happened now?
Yeah, but I think the difference also is you've got someone like Brooke Van Velden who people really like the look of. And actually, when you talk to people on the ground about Brooke, they like what she says and how she says it. Yeah. She's a very, very appealing part of the ACT Party, whereas previously all you had was David Seymour, who used to say some fairly kind of rebellious, renegade things. When you've got someone like Brooke Van Velden, who's also a real good chance, and I know we'll talk about electorates later on, but in Tāmaki, she's got a really good chance. Someone like that actually appeals to a wider sector of New Zealand, and they're getting more votes as a result, or more support as a result anyway.
But ACT will bring in, it's the thing is that with ACT, it's even beyond those
two,
right?
There are others.
You need to keep going down the list, because at 12%, you're going to bring in a real ton of MPs.
People don't tend to look that far down.
No, they don't. And that was the situation when you had that sort of landslide for Labour, and then you would be looking at the pictures of the Prime Minister with the front row standing behind her, and then the others, and you'd think, who's that? So.
And then some guy would come out and blow things up from number 59. I've already forgotten his name, but it does happen.
Yeah, totally. And I know you want to talk about leaders in a moment, but when you look at the popularity of Christopher Luxon, which you have raised, Guyon, just going to put it out there, David Seymour is nipping at his heels, not that far off the pace. And so if they were to go into a coalition together, all right, brace for it, Does the main party have to have the Prime Minister? I'm sorry.
No, I...
Well, yeah, I mean, Winston Peters has raised this a few times, not unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I mean, it's an interesting idea. And constitutionally, no. But, yeah, look, I mean...
Politically,
I think it would be it'd be a zero chance of anyone other than Christopher Luxon leading that government. I would also point out, too, that, you know, New Zealanders do sometimes vote for parties with leaders who aren't that charismatic. And Helen Clark, I mean, those of us there in the gallery at the time, I mean, she, in my view, went on to be, I would say, a great Prime Minister. You know, she was a very, very good Prime Minister. When she was in opposition and in 99, I think they got 39% of the vote, no one was screaming and voting for Helen Clark. There was no Clark mania. No. Similarly for Bolger. Now, again, Bolger, I think, did his best to lead New Zealand in a solid way. There was no Bolger mania.
Well, this
so
is,
you,
this
you
is...
can have pretty solid Prime Minister.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't worry.
It's got to be one of two things, doesn't it, Guyon, or a combination of those two things. I'm interested in everyone's thoughts on this. You've either got to have charisma and capability or be highly capable. And it's not that people think that they want you over for a barbecue, but they trust you.
Well, look, that point about Winston Peters and Jim Bolger is a funny one. I remember the very first time I interviewed a Prime Minister was Jim Bolger when he was Prime Minister, and I was still like about 20, and I said, Prime Minister, the National Party is really popular and Winston Peters is really popular and you're not. Why don't you get out of the way and let ensure your party wins by letting...
So you're annoying people even back then.
It was. And I remember, he said, you're a very naive young man who knows very little about politics, don't you? It's too naive. Naive young man, there's no way Seymour could actually... Get the role, could he? Luxon's going to...
Well,
no, but I think the other thing about Luxon is that what New Zealand like are reluctant leaders. So if you have a look at someone like John Key, I mean, it wasn't like John Key went out and said, I want to be Prime Minister. This guy, everyone knows, got into politics because he wants to be Prime Minister.
Yeah.
And he's pretty much said so. And
see,
I think that rubs people a little bit. They know that's what he wants.
Yeah.
But the other part, you're right. I mean, you look at him and the way he does press conferences and when he answers questions, the guy's got an answer before the reporter's ever finished asking the question itself. He doesn't take the breath. He doesn't stop. He goes straight away. And that's what leads him to say things that ordinarily I don't think he'd probably say, but he does it because he's trying to be forthright and earnest, but also really straight every time it comes up. And I think that has people rub against that.
And he seems to be reliant on the kind of talking points you're talking about. And we heard an example of that not happening on ZB this week.
What's the cost and the time frame on Mount Vic?
Well, the cost on that one is, I haven't got that right before me, but I've got that in detail. But it's I can tell you, Mike, I've got that detail right in front of me. Mount Vic is... It's about $2.2 billion, and we want to get going with that pretty quickly. And sorry, I've got all these details about 30 projects in front of me.
Is that what you're talking about, Julian?
Yep. A little bit of that. And Key would nail this stuff, right? And if he didn't know it, he'd find a way of getting around it. And this guy's just still a bit raw and fresh. But I think the other thing, about the current Prime Minister and, what, only 24-25% or whatever it is in the latest poll, you know, Chris Hipkins is, again, not someone who's inspiring people to vote for him. And I think that's because his political opportunity that Hipkins has missed, that whole sit down and have a cup of tea thing, isn't appealing to people who want to get out and vote Labour.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I mean, Hipkins has been running a campaign about, hey, look at all these Labour policies I don't want to implement, which seems a really bizarre defensive crouch to have got yourself into.
Is it just too
January.
Soon, though? I mean,
well, no, I don't know if it's too soon. I mean, it's just like, well, what are you actually, I mean...
What do you stand for?
The policy bonfire was their big thing. Hey, we've got this bonfire and it's growing and burning and smoking in the backyard because I'm throwing all these policies. Oh, the merger, I'll throw that on the... Here's a whole bunch of other stuff we're not going to do. It seems like he's running a sort of a reverse campaign. So, we're not going to do a wealth tax and we're not going to do all these Labour things. It seems like quite a defensive crouch to have got yourself into in election year.
Which, when I started off by saying the long winter of discontent, you can see that even in members of Chris Hipkins' own party and his own MPs and cabinet ministers. And David Parker is an example of that. And that ties into your bonfire because, I mean...
The bonfire
he just,
of cabinet.
Yeah, he just stoked it with a David Parker policy.
He put his own resignation letter on there, didn't he? Yeah.
We'll come back to David Parker, but let's just play the clip because you're right. There's been a bonfire around cabinet. So Chris Hipkins has kind of tried to run a campaign that said, you know, I'm going to be Labour and basic like this.
My government will bring a strong clarity, sense of purpose and priority to helping New Zealanders through these tough economic times. Our focus will be on the right now and the bread and butter issues that people care about.
So that's the back to basics that he's tried to do that you're talking about, Guyon, but what he's ended up having to talk about is this.
I spoke to Kitty the first thing this morning, just before 7 a.m. I advised her that I did not believe that she was in a fit state to hold a ministerial warrant. She expressed remorse and had already sent me a message just before that, indicating that she intended to resign.
So it's not, he's not campaigning what he wants to campaign on right now.
Yeah, it's a cumulative effect thing. The people say that, and when the news broke about Kitty Allen, that this was potentially going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back and all that kind of stuff. It's a cumulative effect of, you know, Nash and everyone else that's happened. But it's also not having strong policy or something different that makes people get behind you. Mm. You know, 2020, they had a massive mandate. They should have been talking about a wealth tax or capital gains, or even if they wanted GST or food, they should have been talking about it then and moving so that they could get it in place before this election, and they didn't. They squandered it. I think they took Porsche's cautionary words to Bassanio too literally, right? I pray you parry before you hazard. And they parried everything before they hazarded, and now they're in a position of not offering anything. That may change over the next couple of days, but it's probably too late.
So are they going to hazard in the next few months, though? Because they've clearly got stuff up their sleeves, right?
Yeah, but I'd agree with Julian. I think this is a massive wasted opportunity. I mean, how often, if ever, are you going to get a clear majority? I mean, they could ban cats from dairies if they wanted to. I mean, you can do absolutely anything.
You mean
you
the
want.
Past 3 years?
Well, they could,
And they look back and go, I mean, I imagine that there would have been discussions like that from some who said, look, we're going to get booted out at some point. Why don't we put some legacy stuff in here? What have they got to look back on, other than the COVID response, which in my view was excellent?
Yeah. And that's probably what they would say, right? We had a pandemic to get through, so we couldn't do all the other stuff.
But if you look to the Clarks and Cullens and the Kiwi Savers and the Working for Families, and you look back at governments that have actually left legacy there, you know, with a majority, what a wasted opportunity.
Well, wasn't the legacy policy going to be the social income insurance, right? And that went. Yeah. That went in the bonfire.
Part of the bonfire.
And they have said, oh, no, it's on, excuse the pun, back burner. But it's...
it's smouldering away there.
Yeah, come on. You know, it's gone.
No, of course it is.
Yeah, well, this
for the
probably
here
isn't,
now,
a, isn't
it
a good
is
example.
Gone.
They should have done a Bjelke Petersen and, not Joe Bjelke Petersen, sorry, Gough Whitlam. They should have done a Gough Whitlam and just done heaps of policy and put National, if they are a new government, in a position where they can't wind any of it back because there's so much of it. So now, obviously, Gough Whitlam went down at the end, but, you know, go out fighting like a hurricane. Mm. Don't be like the Blues and lose by 50 points in the semi final. Go down for something. If you're going to lose, go down for something.
I reckon that there would have been those discussions, you know,
it feels like there was.
Certainly David Parker must have been arguing that. And, you know, let's put our money where our mouths are and do a wealth tax. This is what Labour is.
But that's the interesting thing.
And Grant Robertson, because it's their names, both those ministers, those were their papers and advice from Treasury. It was their policy. David Parker has made no secret of the fact of what he supports. And ultimately, if anyone bothered to read those papers and advice, the devil is in the detail or not. We would be talking about 46,000 individuals on this $5 million threshold, and it's only every dollar over the $5 million you're going to get extra tax on, weren't intending to introduce it, according to the Treasury papers, for a number of years. This idea that there would be a massive flood away from New Zealand inside the Treasury papers and the advice and the briefings. There is percentages of departures from other countries so people can see how many people would leave, how much it would bring in. None of those conversations are had.
I agree with that. And one of the major failings, and I think Ardern and Hipkins, is the inability to take a big controversial idea that will move New Zealand forward and actually get out on the stump and argue about it. Now, whether you agree with it or not, something like Key selling half the energy companies, you know, he did it a year before the election, said, this is what I'm going to do, vote for me or not, tried to sell the policy and did it. Now, I don't care whether you agree with that policy or not, but I'm talking about a policy that is controversial and that you actually have to lead on.
You stand for and you have to lead on. Sell it.
Yeah. And rather than the other way around. These guys, right from the beginning, even since 2017, whether it's capital gains, wealth tax, a whole bunch of other stuff, have just gone, oh, no, I'm not really, even the marijuana referendum. Mm-hmm. You just go, oh, I'm not going to fight it. And I think that's quite disappointing for some politicians who have got great minds and are obviously very capable, but haven't been prepared to fight for what they believe.
And you can see that, and I take your point through those years in terms of when Ardern was Prime Minister, but you're bringing it up to today. Hipkins came in, had a spike, had that bump when he took over. The guy with the track pants and the sunglasses and the sausage rolls and all that got to 28%, I think, and the preferred Prime Minister was on a bit of a roll, did the bonfire, which perhaps was his clearing the decks for something. And then it's been crickets, right? That's the.
He needed to put the harmony down after that, didn't he? When was the thing
that you're saying, the Key policy, the Clark policy?
It seems to me the wealth tax was going to happen, and something happened, and it didn't. I mean, the polls said the public was for this. 51% said that they were supportive.
Slightly more, I think,
even more. And I can't understand what happened, which turned the tables, and if it was to have the cup of tea and bread and butter and all this kind of stuff.
Let's just run through, because so people know what we're talking about in terms of the. How this wealth tax thing played out. Let's just remind us how this happened.
We know that wealthier New Zealanders pay on average under half the rate of tax paid by middle income earners. But what, if anything, do we do about that in New Zealand? Well, we're not providing the answers today. That's for the future.
So this was David Clark releasing
David Clark was another casualty.
Of the another
could have been worse. You could have seen Joe Bianchi Peterson. But anyway,
he's out mountain biking somewhere.
Parker there saying the tax system's broken. Here's this research from my Adrian Treasury saying that the rich are only paying half as much as your average New Zealander in percentage points.
He was setting the ball up for the goal.
Exactly, right? And then he went on.
Wealthy people should pay a fair rate of tax, and at the moment they don't.
So there you go. The argument is coming, right? And then the gun was loaded, stage was set, and then the Prime Minister made a captain's call, wasn't even in the country, and left his finance minister to say this.
Clearly, we did take our time to see if we could make this work, but the decision was taken not to go.
Were you gutted that Chris Hipkins killed off your tax switch?
No, I wouldn't say gutted. What I would say is it's an idea that clearly I think had some merit. I wouldn't have put so much work into it if I didn't think that it had merit. But I also am a team player.
So there is a very disappointed finance minister. And then, as we've been alluding to, finally David Parker said enough.
I thought it was untenable for me to continue, so I suggested to Chris that it was in the best interest of him and the party that someone else take that role.
Those are two very senior, very devastated Labour MPs, right?
Yeah, and it would have been a massive story if it wasn't for the Kitty Allen story, which was kind of working at the same time. It was a rare ministerial resignation on a point of principle, wasn't it?
I mean, what are you supposed to do? Stand there through gritted teeth? Because much anticipated tax policy is going to be announced, was, I believe, supposed to be coming out about now, and now not. Still haven't seen it.
Not yet.
But so what is he going to do? Stand there with gritted teeth delivering a policy that is not what he wanted, potentially is not what he truly believes in. You know, and some people, there was criticism and commentary about whether he had really kicked his leader in the shins at a time when all this other stuff was going down with Kiri Tapu Allen and all the other ministers who died in a ditch.
He tried to go quietly but he's under a
man,
the cover of
he's a man who can't lie, right? You ask him a straight question. And I'm not suggesting that others are, but he gets caught in the moment and he's compelled to tell you the truth. Untenable.
You asked him about this just the other day in an exclusive piece of audio we've got, which didn't actually go to air, but does show you the awkward position David Parker's in.
One last thing. What do you think of GST or fruit and vegetables as a policy?
I'm not here to talk about tax policy today.
No, I'm not asking you about your party's tax policy. I'm asking your personal opinion on whether fruit and veggies minus GST is a good thing, do you think?
I'm here to talk about transport policy.
Do you not have an opinion on fruit and veg and GST?
I'm not the spokesperson on that.
Yeah, that's revealing, eh? And look, you take all this into account, but particularly with David Parker's resignation, you take all this into account and you think, so what do they do now? Right, and they've lost the narrative on things that they've done, like MHA and all that kind of stuff, and Te Whatu Ora and everything that's going on there. They're not going to have the wealth tax now. There are lots of New Zealanders who are looking actively, young New Zealanders, by the way, who are leaving New Zealand to go to Australia in their droves now. They're talking about it actively, saying they want to go soon before the election, some. And you don't have a policy that tries to get people to get in behind you to say something like a wealth tax, which would actually have not led to lots of wealthy New Zealanders leaving. They would have stayed.
The context is interesting with Hipkins, because he's a follow-up leader, right? Mm. And Labor's had a bunch of these. I'm going to do my history thing again. But, you know, right back in the 30s, you've got Peter Fraser coming in after Mickey Savage, right? In the 70s, you've got Bill Rowland coming in after Norman Kirk. You've got Palmer and Moore coming in after Longie. Labor's had kind of star, big-name prime ministers followed up by people. Fraser's the only one who's gone on to make a name. You know, so the question for Hipkins is, how does he not be Rowling? How does he not be another Bill Rowling who kind of, you know, was a decent guy and a good minister and people kind of liked him and was a good bloke, but never really caught the imagination, right? And couldn't follow up the star turn before him. Is Hipkins stuck still a little bit in Ardern's shadow? And what does he do to get out of it? We're saying policy, but is there anything else?
I think it's too late for that, really.
Really?
In my view, he needed to move on that more quickly and earlier in the year. There's no problem clearing the decks. We've talked about it as a bonfire, but you need to then say what you are going to do, and it has to be a bit radical. It is a little bit like the sporting thing. If you're a couple of points ahead and you play a really defensive game, you can end up getting crushed. Yeah. And I think that's what's happened to him to a degree. It feels like, what do you stand for? We stand for being re-elected.
Yes.
And it doesn't really feel like he's put much more on the agenda since then. And it's difficult to see how he can move from there.
In discussing the wealth tax, I think it's also important to point out that it wasn't just a wealth tax, it was a transfer.
A tax switch.
It was a tax switch. So lower income brackets were going to get tax relief out of this. And that
Which you
potentially
thought would have been a good sell, right?
Well, it's
kind of what you
lost.
That's what Labor
hasn't
does.
Hasn't it been lost in the conversation, the fact that it was a tax shift? And whether you believe in this or not, whether you support this policy or not, it goes back to what Guyon was saying. Virtually zero discussion of the merits, the facts, the consequences, who would benefit from it, what would low-income brackets get, the thing that Labor would be selling to its core constituency, arguably. Mm.
So we're saying that you know, Labor is not actually presenting much of a vision. And look, they might say, and I think Hipkins
the vision's going to be
say,
GST
just you wait,
or food.
Just you wait. See what's
veggies.
But what we're also picking up here is that National is not benefiting from this, right? Luxon is also pretty small target stuff, right? He's not exactly laying out a big grand vision, or is he? Is there a vision that you see in Luxon? Because why isn't National better than 36? Why isn't Luxon better than, oh my God, 16% preferred prime minister? He is not connecting with people, right?
People are depressed. I'm sorry.
So
they are.
It's not them. It's us.
No, I think it is.
It's not you. It's me.
It is a combination of things, like the shopping list that we started with at the top. Westpac has done a survey in Auckland on the average mortgage with a 20% deposit that was taken out in the last 3 years, $1,600 extra dollars a month, based on that. Huge swathes of our country have been decimated in extreme weather events. Those people are knee and thigh deep still in silt, waiting on the government to negotiate a buyout package with councils. And obviously, that's a big negotiation when it comes to Wayne Brown in Auckland. So they are knee deep in crap, literally. Yeah.
I think you ask where National's vision is. You go back to 2008. Can anyone remember what Key was promising? Mm-hmm. I bet you can't. And because in New Zealand, and as the name's a bit of a giveaway, because it is what it says on the tin, that's what Conservative parties are.
Exactly.
It's a Conservative party. Yeah. And so it whether you believe them or not, whether it's true or not, they will tell you that they're better at managing the economy and they're going to bring in more law and order and they're going to go back to basics and teach you science and maths and in education. They're going to have have targets for the health system. So that's kind of what they are. And in New Zealand are reforming radical governments, and you mentioned some of them before, whether it's Long Ian Douglas or whether it's Michael Joseph Savage and the welfare state. Big reforms have come from Labour parties, and our conservative management and economic soundness has, or the perception of that, is championed by the National Party. So I think the acid is probably more on Labour's vision. I don't think that National will be worried about not having a big vision. I think that, that they are going to try and convince the electorate, look, things, your mortgages, your delivery, your system of government is going to be better magically under us.
Capability now, and tax, with a few tax cuts.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the other thing I was thinking was also, and I know he said that, you know, my prime ministership, I won't do this, all this kind of stuff. But after the election, when you have parties like the Māori Party and the Green Party saying, no, these are bottom lines, you go, well, sorry, I said that, but I've got dragged there because that's what they want. And if I don't do it, I'm not in government, so we're going to go there anyway. And then do it early, and then by the time he gets to the next election, now maybe he's not that strategic, but that's a way of getting around it.
But so with either party, when the major party is struggling, the minor party could be where the vision comes from, actually.
And, well, and the only party, the only party proudly saying that they're going to bring in radical policy, and meaning radical is good, is Te Pāti Māori. Anyone else...
The Greens might hurt a little bit to hear you say that.
No, but they use the word radical to describe their... They're self-described radical policy, Te Pāti Māori. They're owning that word. They're owning the fact that they're going out on the limb compared to the other parties. If you said to those other parties, if a commentator described that policy as radical, would you think that was a good or a bad thing?
Right.
I think they would think it was a
very
bad thing.
Very different from the previous iteration of the Māori Party.
Absolutely. Yeah. But they say they're owning it. And when I spoke to Rāwhiti Waititi about his tax policy and said, well, it's interesting that both you and the National Party describe this as a radical policy.
Which is what ruled them out of a national coalition.
Yes. And he said, radical's good. Radical is good. You don't get change without being radical. Radical is good.
You wouldn't have
badge of honour.
Turned it off level saying that.
No.
Yeah, and but the other thing, if you look at the other side of the spectrum, is what happens with Winston, Seymour, and or if that's going to happen at all, Winston, Seymour, and Luxon, because you've got a party who is basically saying they're anti-woke. You know, that's their catchphrase. New Zealand First is saying, well, we're anti-woke. And, you know, again, the latest poll, they went up. 4.1%, and that age-old question of Winston's is coming back is the one that everyone will be asking.
Let's do this. What do we think about Winston?
Let's do this. There's a good phrase. Some party should capture that.
Oh my God, it's in my head. Let's listen to what Winston Peters has said so far. Well, actually, he said last year to Audrey Young, I think, not going with Labour. That was the first time he actually said very openly. But then he's been asked again since.
We ain't going with Labour because of the way they behaved and their racist, separatist policies.
So that was just a few weeks ago. The first time he ruled out Labour, he said this crowd, which was under Ardern, and you could argue there was room for him to move in terms of now with Hipkins, the new leader. But this was just a couple of weeks ago. He's ruling out Labour. Does it mean anything?
Maybe. I mean, if you go back to 2005, he said, we are definitely going to sit on the crossbenches, right? And after the 2005 election, he was made foreign minister. So you have to... And he would still argue with you. He'd go down to the basement and get a document out of the boot of his car and tell you it was slightly different or whatever. So you got to give him a bit of wriggle room there. But yeah, it is interesting because he's ruled himself out of the kingmaker position now, hasn't he? In that sense, if he's true to his word.
This is what interests me about this election is that we... And I'm still seeing it in the media coverage now about whether Te Pāti Māori or New Zealand First will be kingmakers. Potentially, they can't be kingmakers. National has ruled out Te Pāti Māori, so theoretically they can only go one way. New Zealand First has ruled themselves out of a coalition with Labour, so they can only go one way.
Yes, and now
so there is no kingmaker
this
time.
ACT has ruled out working with Winston Peters in a National ACT coalition, so the doors are closing on Mr. Peters.
This is really different. This is different, right? We haven't had an MP election like this. Well, every MP election has been about, oh, who's going to go with who, and who's not ruling out who, and will they go left or right?
Yeah, this is quite, a genuine MMP election in that you've got the centre party and its flank party, you know, the National and Labour, and then the Greens and ACT to their flanks, and it's kind of those teams, those blocks, isn't it?
You've got
two
blocks.
With the passing Māori if the left side gets over.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, the perfect scenario for National is what's played out in the poll. Winston gets 4% wasted vote.
Yes, it does.
That's true.
He doesn't get over 5% and then National's in with that. Right?
And
all problems are solved. What changes is if he gets over 5%, then we have to see what happens after that. Now, he could just go confidence and supply and I'll sit on the crossbenches. And by the way, if you give me a bauble, I'll take it. Not necessarily as a part of a cabinet arrangement. But, you know, that's
he wants to be part of cabinet, though, doesn't he? That's his whole reason to live.
Well, of course he does. Well, and, you know, and Shane does as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and the anti-woke thing, I personally think, and most people will probably say who know these guys really well, they don't believe a word of it. They really don't. The separatist angle, they don't believe a word of it. I mean, Provincial Growth Fund went on Marae and Te Taitoko, not most of it, a lot of the resource went on Provincial Growth Fund and Te Taitoko. Yeah. You know, this is who Shane Jones is, right? Yeah. So don't believe any of the spin that they're saying. They're just saying it to get over the 5% whether they can get there. And that's their only way.
Sorry. But it is different that Winston Peters has previously said, I'm the kingmaker. This time he's ruled one of the major parties out.
Yeah, he spent one of his biggest bargaining chips by saying that he's not going to go with Labour. So he can't play his favourite children off again.
Voters actually hear that, or do they still think, Winston will do what he wants anyway?
He's incredibly smart as a politician, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think this is what he's done. I haven't got a direct line to his way of thinking, but I reckon this is what he's done. I reckon he has very early sensed that Labour's going to lose, and that he sensed this a long time ago, and that his best chance of getting back is for voters who want rid of Labour but don't quite trust this Chris Luxon's bit new, doesn't really know what he's doing and acts a bit radical, so I'll get old Winston to sort of take the rough edges off them, and that's what he's relying on. He's relying on an anti-Labour vote and him as the buy yourself some insurance and I can get this Luxon guy into line. And I think he's made that call early, and strategically it's probably not a bad shot for him. He can't play the kingmaker, but he just wants to get back into Parliament. He loves the place, and that's what he wants to do.
He's Uncle Winnie to Luxon in the same way he was Uncle Winnie to
Ardern. I'll provide the experience. And he knows too that backing a third term government, as he did in 2005, you're gone. Yeah. He doesn't like to do it. He did it in 1996 too, didn't he? Mm. He backed a third term national government. The whole thing blew up. And so he knew this. He knows this, and that's why he said. He's basically saying I'd go with National because in the third term, imagine it, Winston and Labour and all.
But
those
this
guys,
is where he does switch around, right? In 1996, I think it was, he said, I'm not going to sit in a cabinet with Jenny Shipley or Ruth Richardson.
No, that was Tohunere who said that.
Okay.
He was.
New Zealand first, but
most of New Zealand thought that he would go with Labour.
He went the other way, and he didn't.
But he could still go
with Labour. But I take your
point. No, he wasn't. Well, we have to take him in good faith, even though he's done whatever he's done. We still have to say he's ruled himself out of working with Labour. I think there's no point triple guessing ourselves.
I think he had to. I think you're right.
And I think
if he didn't do that, he's nowhere near 4%.
I think we have to believe him that he has ruled out Labour.
Okay, then given that you've brought up the potential 4.1% of wasted vote, is it a masterstroke by Christopher Luxon and the National Party not to rule out Winston Peters? Because you raised the point of people bleeding from Winston Peters to the ACT Party. Do you want Winston's 4.1% if you say, I'm not working with you, Winston, to go to the potential coalition partner that has more weight, heft and expects more in government with you?
Like the Prime Ministership.
No. It's interesting. You must have thought a lot about this.
I don't know.
National must think that they would get some of that 4% themselves, wouldn't they?
They will get exactly, let's say that these poll numbers are right, they would get, and just so people realise this is how the system works, they would get 36% of that 4%.
Right.
So they get that anyway. And Julian's right, that's a perfect score. They would love that if Peter's got 4%.
Whereas if you...
suck up the residual.
Whereas if you gave voters the opportunity to defect to another party by saying, I will not work with Winston Peters, then you could be faced with an entirely different scenario. While National may pick up some of that vote, ACT would potentially pick up a chunk of that.
I suppose in some ways Seymour's done it for him, hasn't he? So we now know really that there can't be...
What were his words, though, his exact words? Sitting around the cabinet table or something to that effect?
I take that to mean at the executive as a whole, so he won't be part of the government with a capital G, which is the government, as people should know, is the executive.
Memorandum of understanding?
Well, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't be
Does
part
that
of...
Does that count?
Yeah. What I was going to say is no one can control whether he gets into Parliament, except the voters. No. It's whether he's in government.
Yes.
And they're now saying it's not looking like he would be in government with either side. But who knows? I suppose it's possible.
But Peters would... But, you know, Mr. Baubles of Office, Winston Peters, is his goal is not just to get into Parliament, it's to get into Cabinet.
Well, he's done quite a few terms just in Parliament.
Yeah, I guess he has.
Yep.
He loves it.
What I thought you were going to force us to do was put our nuts on the line, to use
being,
a phrase.
I'm being nice.
And say whether or not he's going to get over 5%. Well, I will say, without a shadow of a doubt, I'm
later.
Not prepared to make a call now. Guy on and Lisa may be more brave than I am, but I'm not prepared to make
later
a call.
Later on,
we should have to make a call
you.
Every week and change our minds if the facts change. My opinions change too.
Later on, we make you write it down and seal it in an envelope.
We do. Coming later.
I will say this. I think it's going to be very hard for him because, you know, he's got usually three big cards, right? It's fear that modern iterations of Māori politics are going to have too much power. That's one big card he always plays.
Yeah.
He plays the immigration card very, very strongly. Now, that's been ripped off him. ACT has taken a lot of...
Well, immigration's coming back.
Yes, it is, but not as a political issue.
No,
I think people
playing.
Still in their heads think the borders are somehow might be closed or whatever.
I think you're right,
the numbers are there. But I'm just saying two of his biggest cards, that is fear that somehow Māori are going to take too much power, that has been co-opted by ACT, and the immigration card isn't there for him. So he's been lurching around the sort of anti-vax sentiment too, and there's a lot of competition in that space.
And
so I think it's going to be
sex
tough
education
for him.
In schools and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The immigration stuff now is that I think immigration in people's mind is not different people who are different from me arriving. It's all more nurses and teachers and stuff.
Yes.
So our view
and
of immigration has changed, hasn't it?
The one we haven't talked a lot about is the Green Party. And given what's happened with climactic events and weather events this year, you would have thought that they'd corner the market a little bit more than they have at the moment. Now, they've talked about wealth tax and all that kind of stuff. They need to get boots on the ground in places like Ngāti Kaunganu, Te Tai Rāwhiti, Coromandel, those kind of places, and really start pushing that message a lot more. And I don't think we're hearing enough of it. It might be because the leaders are kind of bound a little bit because they're ministers, right? So they can't do a real kind of big campaign launch until the end of August. But the fact that we haven't heard a lot more from them, particularly given, predictions and all that kind of stuff about climate, is kind of interesting to me.
Going by last night's poll, 9.6% the Greens, up a bit. That would be their third best result ever
if they got
9.6. That's going into an election campaign.
But
they
should
be matching.
They should be matching ACT at 12.
You reckon?
Is what I'm. Well, yeah, because I would have thought
Labor
of, because
Labor's
with
low.
Labor,
yeah.
With Labor,
with Labor sinking, they should be getting more of that. So where's that other vote going? And is it
undecided?
They're
only picking up.
Yeah.
If you look at how much Labor dropped, they're only picking up approximately half of Labor's dropped vote. So where's the other half going?
I think
to Julian's point.
Julian makes good points there. I think though it sometimes is the problem for the Greens that when your policies become mainstream, you lose your exclusivity over them, don't you? So if you kind of want to look at what Labor's policy is going to be in 10 years' time, you look at where the Greens are now. And so a lot of their policies that were deemed radical back in the day are now pretty mainstream. Yeah. And so you lose some of your, uniqueness, I guess.
No, that's true. And because they're, as I say, their co-leaders and ministers, they're probably bound a little bit in terms of campaign launch. But the one they need to get out there more, and she's the one that people look at now, is Chloe. And she's their political jewel in their crown.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, people, that is, I think, our agenda worked through for this week. So I will take that and I'll send you the minutes later and then to sign off.
Oh, we can just pour over every word.
We're not going to have any caucus resignations or sackings or anything.
God, untenable.
This is not untenable. This is a joy and a pleasure, and it's been great to have you with us, listeners. It's great to be back in your ears. So thanks for your time. Julian, thank you.
Kia ora.
Lisa.
Ka kite.
And Guyon.
Matewa.
We will be back with you next week, next Thursday and Sunday on the radio. Have a great week.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.